Washington, D.C., Sunday, April 2nd, 2006. George Washington University Hospital, Special Care Unit, 10:10 p.m. The slow pound of Nicholas Martin's heart sounded like a drum buried somewhere inside him. His own breath, as he inhaled and exhaled, resonated as if it were a movie soundtrack. So did the sound of Caroline's labored breathing as she lay on the bed next to him, alongside the chair where he sat holding her hand. For what seemed the 10th time in half that many minutes, he looked at her. Her eyes were closed, as they had been, her hand resting gently in his. For all the life in it, it might as well have been a glove. Nothing more. How long had he been in Washington? 2 days? Three? Flown there from his home in Manchester, England, almost immediately after Caroline's call asking him to come. He'd known the minute he heard her voice, something was terribly wrong. It had been filled with dread and fear and helplessness. And then she told him what it was. She had a very aggressive, untreatable staph infection and was expected to live only a few days more. For all the horror and shock of it, there had been something else in her voice. Anger. Something had been done to her, she told him, suddenly whispering as if she were afraid someone would overhear. No matter what the doctors said or would say, she was certain that the infection killing her had been caused by bacteria that had deliberately been given to her. It had been then, judging from sounds in the background, that someone had come into the room. Abruptly, she'd finished with an urgent plea for him to come to Washington, then hung up. He hadn't known what to think. All he knew was that she was terribly frightened and that her situation was made all the worse by the very recent deaths of her husband and 12-year-old son in the crash of a private plane off the coast of California. Martin found it impossible to know if there was any basis at all for her suspicion. Still, the reality was that she was desperately ill and wanted him to be with her. And from everything he'd heard in her voice, he knew he'd better get there as quickly as he could. Within the day, flying from Manchester in the north of England, to London, and then on to Washington, D.C., taking a taxi from Dulles International, directly to the hospital, and later getting a room at a hotel nearby. That Caroline knew who he really was and the risk she dared subject him to by asking him to come back into the United States had not been brought up. She would never have asked if something wasn't terribly wrong. So he had come, hurriedly back to the country he had fled 4 years earlier in fear for his life and that of his sister. Come back after so many years and the differing paths their lives had taken, because Caroline had been and was still the one true love of his life. He knew, too, that even though she was happily married and had been for a long time, in some unspoken, even profound way, she felt the same about him. Martin looked up sharply as the room door was suddenly flung open. A heavy-set nurse entered, followed by two men in dark suits. The first was broad-shouldered, in his early 40s, with dark, curly hair.
"You'll have to leave, sir, please," he said respectfully.
"The president is coming," the nurse said curtly. At the same instant, Martin felt Caroline's hand tighten around his. He looked down and saw her eyes were open. They were wide and clear, and looked into his the way they had that first day they met, when they were both 16 and in high school.
"I love you," she whispered.
"I love you too." She looked at him for a half second more, then closed her eyes, and her hand relaxed. "Please, sir, you have to leave now," the first suit said. At that same moment, a tall, slim, silver-haired man in a dark blue suit stepped through the doorway. There was no question who he was. John Henry Harris, President of the United States. Martin looked at him directly.
"Please," he said softly, "give me a moment alone with her. She's just died."
The men's gaze held for the briefest moment.
"Of course," the president said,
his words hushed and reverent. Then, motioning to his Secret Service protectors, turned and left the room.